You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
That's right, we say what we want. Welcome, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. Each Monday at 11 a.m., this show brings you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, or dealing with addictions. We will introduce you to specialized schools and treatment programs that can really help, and new innovations in the areas of health and security for your family. With over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate enough to meet and work with some of the top professionals in these areas of expertise. I'm thrilled to have as my guests today two such talented and caring professionals in Linda McKinney and Jeffrey Kemp. Before we get any questions, I want to share a little bit about them. Jeffrey Kemp has dedicated over 30 years to working with teenagers in Australia. He is also the founder of Esteros, a groundbreaking two-part wilderness intervention program in Australia. Linda McKinney has been working with at-risk youth for over 18 years. Over that time, she has committed herself to the rehabilitation of young people and the guiding of families through difficult times. Jeffrey, Linda, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. And I think to get right with it, Jeff has flown here from Australia, everybody. So, Jeff, tell us what brings you to the States.
Okay. Well, thanks. First of all, Alan, thank you very much for inviting me on your program. I'm particularly interested in the work you do as well. But the background goes like this, that, yes, for 35 years now I've been involved in education. And for many of those years, I was responsible for specialist support services to 135 schools in Brisbane, Queensland, Australia. And in that capacity, the programs were to do with learning difficulties, challenging behaviours, Indigenous education, children learning second languages. In that role, I also was responsible for distributing Commonwealth Government money to programs for kids who were out of school. These were street kid programs, programs for kids in the juvenile justice system. So in the course of that responsibility, I've been to all of the centres throughout Queensland. They aren't very attractive places to be.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course of that, I can recall one inmate in particular who's, when you read his file, I just felt that if there was only some early intervention, that perhaps his outcome wouldn't be as it is. And when you're in jail, you have to be good at being bad to survive. So mm-hmm. Your future is pretty much determined. So I thought that when I'm old and grey, which is now, that that I moved from my main work in Brisbane, in our capital city. I've always lived on the Gold Coast. I would return to schools to put some time into a program for kids. And so a colleague also talked me into doing some teaching. I have a PhD in education and teaching in the education faculty at Griffith University on the Gold Coast. So I returned to college, or high school, as you call mm-hmm. it here,
yeah.
And then commenced this program. So the program goes like this. We have six secondary Catholic schools in the region, and I looked at all of the kids in the schools, and we selected 10 youth, age 14,
mm-hmm.
From the six Catholic schools on the Gold Coast, and these were boys who were at risk of being expelled from school or told that we don't do it so well for you here anymore. That's the way they expel kids in Australia. These kids were at risk through family dysfunction,
challenging behaviours, learning disabilities, some substance misuse, but not a lot. And these were kids who would disappear from the scene. And typically those boys ended up in the juvenile justice system. So my program is a bit different in that it goes for a year, at least a year. It involves a two-part wilderness experience where we take the 10 boys. I work in with a group called the Police Citizens Youth Club in Australia. These are young men and women who are outdoor educators. And we operate, or they operate, a program in the hinterland of the Gold Coast, which is a bit rainforesty. It's a sort of a jungle. It's not our real outback, but it is in the hinterland. And we go there for 10 days. In that period, I was saying to Linda here, that who's looking after me especially well, that I call the boys the microwave boys, because like me, they can't cook and they just they just press the button. And so so we go into it, and we establish goals, and the boys are kitted out for the week with their gear, and it involves going into the wilderness from that point. And we engage in bushwalking for 25 k's, and they cook their own food. We do abseiling, or what you call it,
rappelling.
Rappelling, that's right. That's rappelling right. Here, I'm getting used to it. And then we also engage in lots of hours of kayaking, and it really is a wilderness experience for them. Yeah,
right. Mm. Well, let me add something. First of all, we have been joined by Parker Green.
Hello, Parker? Everyone.
There we go. Parker works with Westshield, and he is here with us. And one of the reasons why he's at this show is that he has lived in Australia for about, what is it?
3 years.
Three years. So, yes. So I thought that this would be a good show for him to be at. Now, going back to Jeff, what you're talking about.
Yep.
Now, as far as you coming now to the United States, are you coming here to learn more from what we're doing to help your program? Because it also sounds like you need to be also sharing this with us to help ours.
Yeah, certainly it's the former. I mean, once I started to research wilderness therapy, it became something to me that, for me, the idea is that, or the worth is that you walk with children for an extensive period of time. It's not just a once-off thing, and all the research shows that. So in doing the research, it just pointed me to the States, because over here it's a big industry, and there's lots of research. And I became quite friendly with Keith Russell, Professor Keith Russell from the University of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And in my research, he kindly identified 5 sites of exemplary practice for me to go and visit while I'm here. And I'll be finishing with the AEE conference in Vancouver, on the way home to a water-based program in Hawaii. But the Griffith University, where I teach as well, have recognized my work and have actually provided a scholarship for me to come here. That's how I came here. I've searched in Europe and here, and clearly the body of knowledge is here. It is saying to Linda coming over in the car, it really is a new frontier in Australia. And my program is something that I do as an extra, really. I work full-time at St. Michael's College on the Gold Coast. It's a co-ed college, and I'm very interested in sport on the Gold Coast as well. So involving youth back in the community through sport and through surf lifesaving as well is something I'm very interested in. But answer to your question, yes, I in my research, it just led me to this place, and then through Keith Russell, I understand there's literally hundreds of programs over here. I've read the research. I think it's got something to offer kids. Wilderness therapy, not only being in the wilderness, but the therapy at key times within there. Mm-hmm. And to be with and walk with kids over a couple of years, and I can go into more detail, but it does make a difference. Yeah.
Well, from what you're saying, it sounds like we could probably twist Linda's arm to maybe get her company to send her over to look at your program to help what we're doing. Yeah. So I think that, you know,
it's in the works.
She's already pushing.
She'd be
for
very
that.
Welcome. Yeah, she'd be very welcome.
Well, Linda, I know you've been doing this for over 18 years. Have you noticed any overall differences in the kids that you've worked with going back that 18 years? So starting from the beginning of your career to the kids that you see now, what is the biggest difference?
I'm not sure there's a really big difference. probably from the beginning, when I started in the early 90s till now, I've noticed an upswing on kids who they are very emotionally distraught. They can't really connect with their feelings, but we have raised a nation of angry, entitled children. These kids feel so entitled that you can never do enough for them. Laughing at Jeff about the microwave kids,
mm-hmm.
we call those kids who want instant gratification.
Sure.
Kids who have never had to really apply themselves. They want everything faster, better, here, now.
That's right.
Let's go.
I was thinking the same thing when he said that. When he mentioned about the microwave, I went, it's not just food. That's the thought that I had. Yeah. It's not
exactly.
just food. You're absolutely
exactly.
right.
Exactly. Yeah. And it all has to be immediate. And these kids do not learn to apply themselves, and they don't know what short-term goals are. They're not, like, just as far as cooking, because everyone knows that's one of my passions. They don't have to put together a recipe and wait for the outcome.
Mm-hmm. That's
they
right.
just throw it in the microwave, as Jeff was saying. So applying those things in day-to-day life, these kids want it all, and they want it now. Don't know how to work towards achieving these goals.
Parker, let me ask you this. Having lived in both areas, you've lived in Southern California,
yeah.
and you have lived in, whereabouts were you in Australia?
I was in Sydney at Maroubra Beach.
Okay. What differences did you see between being that age, you know, essentially when you were over there?
I was 18 when I arrived.
Right. So how would you compare the Southern California kids to the Sydney kids?
Sydney kids are, I would say, they get a chance to grow up a bit more. The kids in Southern California grow up so ridiculously fast. I would say a lot of the Aboriginal kids in the in like the inner city, in like say Redfern, Waterloo, Sydney area. Those are the type of kids someone's.
I apologize.
No, you can answer. It's fine.
Go ahead. It might be somebody we know.
Just put them up to the mic.
It's yeah.
all good.
Yeah, just tell them, hey, you're now on the air.
It's funny because we were just talking about that.
That's right.
But I would say those kids in the inner city, just like any inner city in the world, would have to learn how to grow up a lot faster. Not because they're illegitimate kids, mostly because their parents, a lot of their parents are illegitimate. So, but as far as like overall scope of the kids, I would say Southern California kids do grow up a lot faster, and definitely the line between right and wrong is a lot more blurred in Southern California than I would say it is in Australia. I mean, you have the same problems, you have the same issues with teenagers over there. You got your sex, drugs, rock and roll. It's the same thing, but there's a bit more relative. There's still a greater sense of conscience, I would say, with a lot of the kids. So,
mm-hmm. Now, Linda or Jeff, I mean, do you think that a lot of this comes from the commercialization? You know, everything is thrown at them so much, you know, that it's flashed in front of them.
Mm-hmm. There's no doubt that Generation Y and the instant generation is very, very. Very, very current in Australia. Kids want information instantly. I mean, they can get information instantly. And unless you can provide quality information, they disregard it. So they want stuff in real time, here, now. It's the instant generation. And it is a very much an individual, self-centered generation. And it's one that I think that's one way that the wilderness therapy approach can really peel that back to find, so the kids can find the real life, the real person within that. And kids do look for that. I mean, we all know teenagers. I was just saying to Linda that I was looking at some of your youth at the airport and places. I mean, they strut the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just the same.
Yeah.
It could be the Gold Coast. I mean, the way they wear their clothes is exactly the same. The way they slob around is just the same. But it takes a lot of work to look like that, you know.
I put
a lot of effort into it.
I would definitely say that the whole self-centered thing is definitely a big part of it. Because I would say going into a wilderness program, I used to camp all the time when I was a kid because I grew up in Washington State, so we had campgrounds everywhere. But camping was an experience that made me realize how small I actually was, because I was intimidated by the wilderness I was actually in. So. especially as a guy going out there and learning how to protect yourself, how to find food and stuff out there with my dad, how to fish stuff if you didn't have a fishing rod, say. It really teaches you that, okay, I'm not the center of the world. Everything doesn't revolve around me, which I'm 22, so I'm still very much learning, but I guess that's a process for everyone, but yeah. I would say that's a huge part of a wilderness experience for me personally.
Yeah. Oh, no, so, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Wilderness experiences teach kids that they aren't the center of the universe. The sun does not rise and set on them. And it teaches them self-sufficiency, which they just can't get at home. So I totally agree with you on that.
I also would like to support that. I notice, and what I look for too with the boys I take, is I look for their behavior away from school. Most of these boys can't access the curriculum for various reasons. And it's really instructive to see how they behave in a different environment. For example, one boy that we're having a lot of difficulty at the moment with, very difficult background. It's interesting in school, in talking with the teachers, that that in fact I noticed his behaviour was the same at 2 a.m. in the morning as it was at 11 a.m. in class. So in other words, his behaviour wasn't so much the curriculum or his difficulties, mm-hmm. It was his persona. It was more within him. It was part of him. It was his relation to the world. So it's interesting what you can find from that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think for all of you, what do you think that the parents can do differently? Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you think they can do differently to help kind of turn this back?
Okay, well, I'm happy.
Go ahead. You go first.
well, yeah.
I know it's a huge question.
It sure is. Well, firstly, most of the children, youth in my, and by the way, most of the, we talked about the youth and the bravado and so on, but my learning is that when you've got 15-year-old boys that are bulletproof and so on, that they are little boys underneath it. Once you get to know them and you take that back, they are kids and they're precious and they've got a lot of good. And I think that, as I was saying to Linda, that I believe that we're all gifted differently. And I don't mean that in any sort of a silly way. I mean in a sincere way.
Oh, I agree.
And you've got to really look hard sometimes to find it. But if you can find that in an authentic way and connect with kids and then walk with the kids, it does make a difference in their life. And with the parents, most of the parents, 80% of the parents in my program are single mothers. And most of them have come from very abusive situations and life hasn't been good for them. Their basic aim is to survive each day. So then if you take their precious child away and that you can discover in them something that's really quite different. I was saying again to Linda that part of what I do after the end of the first wilderness experience is we have a detailed debriefing session with the outdoor educator, myself, and the parent, mm-hmm. and the college counsellor from where this kid's come. And it's a most powerful time. It's a very, very intense counselling time in that the parents often learn about things about their son that they've never known themselves. So here we have a mother who is trying to survive in a complex world, mm-hmm. and she learns something of a son which she never knew herself. And that can be just so good and so positive and gives them energy to go forward. So parents, what can they do? Try to step back, step outside the window, look in, and have a real honest look at their child. And look at their child, and then to work from there.
Well, I think you touched on something, and I want to quote John Maxwell, who agrees, as I do, with what you just said. Find the thing that they are good at. And yeah. And John Maxwell has a thing that he talks about where he says one of the problems with our system is that we spend so much time focusing on what they're not good at. In other words, if they're not good at math, then they go, okay, well, you know, we need to get tutors, we need to do three times as much math, we need to do all of that. He says it's just the opposite. Find what they are good at and focus on that. They're going to succeed better, they're going to feel better about themselves.
Exactly.
I mean, it's such a win-win situation. So I agree completely with what you're saying, and I think that's great that you're promoting
as long as what you identify is authentic. I find with adolescents
not only does that have to be authentic, but you can't say, "Well, gee, they're really good at watching TV."
Yeah,
you
know? Oh, no, true. But so I find with teenagers that you've got probably 3 minutes to form a relationship with them, and that if you can show them that you're with them in terms you really are with them in that time, you can do much anything with them. And I think that's what I mean about authentic. I say again to Linda, we had lots of conversations already, but just saying that it was a boy in a local school down on the Gold Coast there who was having a real bad time at school. Okay, so, and his own self image was very, very poor, and he could do nothing according to him, but somehow I discovered that he liked breeding fish. Right, so and so he started to expand on that. So we used that and said, "Well, look, mate, I want you to be the best fish breeder in the world, and what do you need to do that?" Some of the things he was telling me in terms of breeding fish, highly complex. I said, "Now, what you're doing there is a complex task, which is a niche market potentially. What else do you need to be a good fish developer?" Mm-hmm. And we talked about right relationships with people, about what business acumen you needed. About responsibility, trustworthiness, honesty to run a business. And now he's breeding fish. He's also attending school and he hasn't been expelled, and his retention rates are really good now. So it's a bit different. Schools don't fit everyone.
Exactly.
You know.
Well, yeah, and it sounds like he's doing something that he likes.
Absolutely.
And he's succeeding at it.
Yeah.
And what more can you ask?
But, you know, he didn't know that that was supposed to be good.
Probably thought he was just quirky. Yeah. Alan once transported a gentleman that... And Alan, I'll let you tell the story, but he had been told for most of his life that he couldn't read. He had difficulty reading, and Alan just didn't quite believe that. Remember that story when you were on the plane?
Oh, okay.
Do you remember that one? And you just showed the kid, "Wait a minute, what are these words?"
Oh, exactly.
And he read them to you, and you're like, "Well, I don't know what you call that, but in my book, we call that reading."
Well, and I think part of it was he was dyslexic, so that part of the problem was that he would read them backwards, or I mean, he didn't when he tried to do it at the speed in which he was being told to do it in the school, it would get jumbled up in his mind, and he'd get frustrated, and he'd just stop. So the teachers then assumed that he wasn't smart enough to do it, whereas in reality, it was because he was dyslexic, and because we went through sort of on a sentence by sentence, and I said, let's just take this sentence. It's only one sentence, and let's just read that. If that's all he had to focus on, then he could do it.
But he was so angry with you for even bringing it up.
Exactly. At first.
At first.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
I actually know quite a few people that have overcome dyslexia and gone on to great careers. I think a big part of it is what we were talking about before, is what we were talking about how someone's strength is so important. I've found in the business world, and anything you do, getting a job, I've turned in hundreds of applications. Like when I first got to Australia, say, I turned in about 100 applications, no joke, and I couldn't find a job. I didn't find a job. I had a 3.8 grade point average in high school, all the good stuff. And it turned out that I just had to know someone, and I think a lot of these kids, especially young boys, have issues with male role models in their life, especially father figures, and that severely hampers their ability to have normal relationships, to have a normal connection with an older man that can teach them how to conduct business or how to do his schoolwork. Because all that's difficult. I mean, a mom goes a long way in loving you and caring for you, but there's a point in your life where you got to switch over into being a man, and I think that's why the age of adolescence just lasts so long now. Mm. And you're picking up kids that are 20, 22.
I agree with that. Back to what can parents do? We were discussing that. Well, the first thing parents can do is, in my opinion, is to stop trying to be a friend to your children.
And be a parent.
They
exactly.
don't want you as a friend. They have friends, mm-hmm. and it's not you. So that's one of the things, and a lot of parents have trouble with that. They say, "Oh, but I love my kids, and we go places, and we do things." Well, that's wonderful, but they're still kids. Let them be kids. and don't drop to their level, still maintain the fact that you are the parent.
It relieve a lot of stress in a kid's life when you give them boundaries.
And structure.
They want them,
absolutely.
Exactly.
That's right. Could I just comment there too, Linda, that my advice to parents is in relation to their children is that kids want you to know about their life world, but they don't want you to be in their life world.
Oh, well put.
Exactly.
The other thing in terms of parenting, what can they do? I think a really important thing is for the parent to look after their own personal well-being. And I really encourage that, because if they can't wake up every morning to a new world, and they can't have some sort of energy and motivation to it, if they can't be well within themselves in terms of personal well-being, find your rock, go and visit it every week, keep fit, those sorts of things. If you can't be at peace with the world or look for good things, how can you be motivational to your child?
I couldn't agree more, and that's exactly what they're seeing. They are seeing whatever it is that you're projecting. If you're projecting that I'm overwhelmed, I can't take it, this is all too much for me, that's exactly what the child's going to see.
Exactly.
And what they're going to feel.
So I've got quite a few mums on the Gold Coast who have taken up jogging and sit on favourite rocks and things like that. But I think it's really... I do it myself. I like to keep fit, and I've got a particular... I was born on the Gold Coast, and I got my first surfboard when I was 12. Don't surf very well anymore, but I still try. Get in a few people's road. But the rock that when I was 12 years old at Currumbin Beach, where I hope Linda's going to visit soon, it's still there. And every Sunday, usually, if the surf's no good, I go for a jog past my rock. And I sit on the rock. I'm getting old, but it's still the same. And that's, you need an anchor. You need somewhere to come back to.
This is true. I've been lucky enough to be director of admissions for several wilderness programs within the Aspen Education Group. And one of the things that we do when a kid does come into one of our wilderness programs is they are hooked up with a therapist. That therapist is also counseling with the parents, and the parents are doing workbooks, because these challenges are not just the child's problem. So we are also trying to educate the parents on how to be better parents, and especially what is your child going through with these wilderness programs. They're unlike anything out there. It's not like they just had a week stay at a Betty Ford Center or something like that. These are completely different, and these parents need to be updated on to as far as, excuse me, what is going on with them on a day-to-day basis, and what is it that they're learning out there, and how to apply that once they get back home. So that's one of the beauties of a wilderness program if it's done correctly, and that's one of the reasons I'm so fond of them, because of the way that they do work both with the family and the student.
Well, Linda, I think you bring up a great point, which also brings me to some of our listener questions. Now, fortunately, we send out press releases that go not only to the people that that's on our list, but we also have some that go out to all of the world. In fact, I even sent some to specific media people in Australia just for this particular show. Well, we got a huge amount of listener questions that were emailed in, so let me ask some of those, but you're leading us into one. One of the questions was, there are so many options for rehabilitation in the United States for teens. How do you decide that someone is ready for a particular program, or which program are they ready for? That's one of the listener questions.
Well, I'll address that to a point. That's kind of a loaded question, and it's not something you can do very quickly. A lot of parents do retain the services of an educational consultant who then also does testing and looks at their academic side of their situation also. A lot of parents, out of a crisis mode, will go ahead and put their child into like a hospital stay. Nothing wrong with that. But because it's insurance-driven, generally speaking, the child has to be fairly acute to stay there.
And it's very short-lived.
Very short. And the insurance company then decides how long they get to stay based on acuity. So that's one of the ways that a parent will – one of the immediate things that a parent will do when they're in crisis. There are different options available to them, but most parents don't know this because it's not in the – baby books that you get.
Right.
There's no way to know.
Right. But I think what you're saying, and you know, for those out there, is what the listener is saying is that they've apparently when I read their question, I always wonder where they're coming from. What sort of problems are they having? Where are they getting their information? This tells me it's probably someone who has like gone on the internet or something and gone, wow, there's all these different options. What do I do? And I think what Linda's saying is get a professional. Get somebody that understands your child to work with you as a family, work with your child, and then that will help narrow it down to determine if, you know, based on the testing, should your child go into a short term? Should it go into a long term? You know, those are the questions that you need to have, but you're going to need a professional in there to help you.
It's a lot better that way. I mean, as I said, I've done admissions forever. And if you get a good admissions person on the phone, you know, they're going to let you know
exactly
that this is a good program. But if you have a professional that you're working with, they are giving you a couple of options, and you do get to make the decision, but it's more of an informed decision.
Okay. And speaking of loaded questions, there was another question that came in that said, and I believe this could be given to either one of you, what is more difficult, working with the teens or working with the teens' parents?
Parents.
Yeah, I think that you should really take a life world type of view. You need to really, in my view, you need to really understand the life world of the child. Now, that includes everyone involved in the child. Mm-hmm. And when you do work with the child, you need to be cognizant of that, and you need to make sure or ensure that any sort of upskilling you're giving, in fact, can be achievable in the child's life world to which they return. I think that's a real key thing. You can offer advice that's got no way in hell of working, which means it's going to be disastrous when the child goes back. So you need to understand their life world and give them opportunities and insights to lift themselves a little bit outside of that world, but know that they're still going to be their reality for at least a short term. To me, that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
I still say parents.
Yeah.
Well, you got the short answer.
And I know, exactly. And Linda took so long to think about it. We have another question that came in from a listener that was directed towards Jeffrey that says, I currently live in North South Wales, Australia.
New South Wales.
New South Wales. Okay. Yeah, new. New South Wales. What is it? Anyway, it says, I work with young people in Redfern, mostly Indigenous kids. Many of them snort glue, are sniffing paint, and alcohol is rampant. Could they afford a program like yours, and is there anything similar in New South Wales?
Okay. Firstly, I taught Indigenous kids for a while when I was much younger in the outback, and they have a particular disadvantage in our country. It's a very sorry situation. The Indigenous people represent 1% of our population, so unfortunately they don't have the numbers to be a political force at this point. Much work is being done to encourage kids through education to come out of their situation. Redfern is an infamous place that a lot of effort's been directed to try to overcome the disadvantage of that area. It's a very difficult area. It's much better than what it was. But the hopelessness felt by some Indigenous kids, particularly in isolated areas, does lead to sniffing and the things you indicated there. So I just don't think your listeners need to have the impression, though, that that's a widespread issue in our country, and I'm not defending my country at all. The reality is it is a small yet very serious concern that we have, governments have. In terms of programs on offer, my program is something that I do as part of my normal job. Mm-hmm. It's something I've done because of a personal interest. It's something that I thought needed to be done. I do know that when I go back to my homeland, that the system that I work for and indeed the public system have asked me to come and assist them in looking at models that can be used. In the system that I work for, the inclusion of the disadvantaged is a fundamental principle or aim, or should be, mm-hmm. of the system. Hence, it's been looked at positively. And I guess the background that I have in this area for so many years have some credibility. In terms of New South Wales, our states are quite separate. I believe there's a Christian brother in Sydney that does a very good program. I'm sure that person would know of him.
Okay, now how would, in fact, I want to make sure that I do this during the show anyway, so this is as good a time as any.
Yep.
Tell people how they can get in touch with you. In other words, these are questions that were emailed ahead of time.
Sure.
People that are listening, if they have questions, if you can give a phone number and or yep. a website, that would be great.
Yep. Okay. I think probably best my email at college might be the best. I don't have a website. This is not a private
okay.
business. It's done through the system that I work. It's all okay. free to kids too, within the system.
Right.
It will, I'm sure, expand because of the interest of the Director of Education for the public system in Queensland. But my people, I'm very pleased to receive any emails. My email address is all lowercase. It's JWF Jeff Kemp at St Michael's STMICHALS.QLD.EDU.AU.
Okay. And Parker, do you want to translate that? No, I'm kidding.
And it's Saint, not Saint, and H, not H.
Oh, I'm sorry, Michael. You know, I thought you people spoke funny. You reckon I speak funny?
We were speaking about that on the way up here.
Uh-huh. Well, and we've got some more questions. Before I go to those, Linda, can you give them how to get a hold of you and or a website, a phone number?
As to reach me?
To reach you or to reach...
the program.
To reach Passages or
oh,
to reach
wow.
Aspen
There's,
or...
I was going to say there are quite a few different websites... to reach me would be all lowercase L McKinney at passagestorecovery, all one word, .com. Now, back to the question you asked that was asked of Jeff about programs. Are there any programs in Australia? Well, one of the reasons I would like him, I'm glad that he's out here, is I want him to see our programs and possibly send kids to us so that we can work with them. Since they don't have anything comparable where he is, so that's all part of the deal too. We would like to extend our hand out there so that those kids can also receive the kind of care that wilderness programs provide.
Right. Well, which leads us to one of the questions that's here. It says, this one says it's addressed to Linda. It says, I looked into Passages on the Aspen website. How do you get someone over 18 to a program like that? It says especially if there's an addiction problem and the therapy is not court-ordered.
Okay. Passages to Recovery is an addictions program. And in a case like that, I would definitely suggest an interventionist. And when I speak with the parents or the parties involved, I go over quite a bit of information with them and get information from them to match them up with the appropriate interventionist. And yes, there are quite a few really good ones out there.
Okay. Well, that's good. Another question I believe is for both. It says, I have a daughter that's beginning to, quote, disappear on the weekends. She has come home drunk on a few occasions, and she still thinks that I'm oblivious. Could you... qualify, or could she qualify for a program like Jeff or Linda has?
Definitely, and I want to know how and why she's disappearing on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
I've had parents call me and say, well, you know, she sneaks out at night. I said, then have her sleep in bed with you. Have her sleep on the floor in a sleeping bag. Why is this kid disappearing? There's no reason for that. But, yes, yeah. Situation like that, let's find out where she's going, what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, and you're right, because when I read it, my thought was, why is this plural? This shouldn't be plural. They
Nights.
Should be saying it happened once.
Once, exactly.
I remember when I tried to sneak out. My dad was waiting at the door when I got back.
Yeah, just
he waited for all of us.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. I got caught sneaking in. That was just as bad.
Hey, it was good you had someone there to care for you too, to
That's
get
right.
the door.
That's right.
Yeah, I just before I came over here, I was talking to a mother, teenage daughter, and it's the age-old thing. Mother knows nothing, teenager knows everything. And by the way, everybody else lets their kids sleep around. It doesn't matter if you go to parties. It doesn't matter if you drink. And you're from planet Pluto, and you're the only one that has the audacity to ask me these things. And my answer is really... most of that stuff doesn't really happen. Kids think that's what happens, but mainly it doesn't. So I say to parents, what you've got to have is a parenting style. It doesn't matter what style, have a style. Don't have no style. And have some things that you won't move from, things that are what I call your family creed. That's something you won't move from. And if you've got living with a partner, make sure you're singing off the same sheet with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And have a few rules. Only sweat the big stuff, but make sure you sweat that. Kids don't mind rules as long as they know them and the rules don't change arbitrarily. So have a few rules, but follow them through. Have a family motto approach. And wait a minute, not all kids are doing it, and you're not all from planet Pluto. You're the parent. Be the parent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like that statement.
Yeah, well, I like it as well, and I think a story that I have that I believe Linda knows, I think I've told her this one, but because Linda knows my kids, when my oldest was 5 years old, and he said to me, as he's asking questions and I'm answering them, he goes, "Wow, Dad, you know everything, don't you?" And at that point, I motioned to someone else and said, "Get the video camera. Can you videotape this?" And so they got the camera, and then I went and I said, "Now, what were you saying?" And he goes, "You know everything, don't you, Dad?" And I go, "Well, as far as you know." And afterwards, the person that I had videotape it said, "Why did you do that?" And I said, "Well, because when he's 15 and I know absolutely nothing,
yeah.
I want to show him. Could it be somewhere in the middle, maybe?"
Exactly. What's good now is that my children are older. I'm on the other end where they're like, "Dang, Mom did know what she was talking about." Now they now realize that I'm quite intelligent.
That's where I am
right
now.
And I did know what I was talking about back then.
Mm-hmm. And I think just on that same line that it's all right to parent. You know, parenting is one thing that you don't need a license for. You need a license to drive a car and all the other things, but you don't need a license for a parent, I don't think. In Australia, you don't.
Well, it doesn't mean you shouldn't in some cases.
I totally agree. But I always say in my parenting groups that I run, part of my program is a six-week program I run for parents, and that's what I open up with. I say, "Well, put your hand up if you've got a license for a car," and they'll put their hands mm-hmm. up. "You got a license to be an accountant?" "Yes, few people." "A tradesman?" "Yeah." "What about a parent?" And then they all look at each other, and of course it's a big laugh. No, we don't. So you learn from your own experience, you learn from the values and your own upbringing along the way. But the important thing is to have an approach with kids. That's what they need. They need to know the boundaries so they can try and break them.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, and kids need to have a bit of edge in life. We know that.
Right. And when I say to a lot of parents, I go, "Have you forgotten? You know, have you forgotten what you were like?" I mean,
yes.
You know, at some point they didn't suck out half your brain and you didn't forget the fact that you probably did a lot of the same things. You know, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, yeah. I've been trying for years to get my four kids to call me old wise one, but they won't. They call me lots of things, but not that.
Yeah, I get the old part. I don't get the wise one.
My mom always tells me that I'm going to have a kid exactly like myself.
Right,
and that's going to be my punishment.
Well, I'd say, and that's her threat, right?
It's mostly my mouth that's the problem, but she's like, "You're going to have the mouthiest kid." Trust me.
And I had my two that were nothing like me. Thank God Almighty.
Yeah. Well, I know it's lighthearted at the moment, and it's good because I think that people can be too serious in life too, and I think that a lot of parents have got to try and loosen up a bit too and enjoy the, I guess, the spark of life,
yeah,
the joy of life.
Absolutely.
And I think that's really important that they do that because they've got I guess, responsibilities and rights too as parents. They've got their life too and they should be living their life.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I mean, the same way we're laughing now, you need to be laughing with your kids as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
You know, time has flown by, and we've only got about 5 minutes, and there's still a few more listener questions. Let me get through those, because if the people took the time to send them in, I want us to try to answer them. And this one I think you guys will like. It says, the question, or the statement says, it says, "I really like the idea of wilderness therapy. I think the surroundings would go a long way to help kids. But what about the after program? You know, how do you combat relapse?"
How do you combat relapse? Well, hopefully, while they're in the program, I know that the Aspen programs do this. There is a very intense aftercare program, or excuse me, aftercare plan, so that they don't have relapse. I know that you hear in recovery that relapse is part of recovery, but You know, we're trying to avoid that. So there's an aftercare plan. The therapist working with this child might say to the parents, the worst thing you can do is bring this kid back and put him right back in the same school. What about another school? Or this kid might need additional help in a residential program or an emotional growth boarding school or something along those lines. But I've never heard of a therapist at a wilderness program saying, this kid is fixed, he can come back home and everything's grand.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It's a lot more work ahead.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more.
Just in relation, that's the principal reason why I have my program go for a minimum of 1 year, because I believe you really have to journey with the child over time, particularly from 14 to 16. If you can be with them for 2 years, you can make a difference. In between I have two part-time wilderness programs. One is the hinterland-based program, and then in between time, there's intensive parent training. There's also what I call round-tabling in schools. I actually buy round tables, and in a secondary school you've got a whole bunch of teachers passing through a child's life. Everyone's got the problem, but no one owns it. So I get it,
right.
Get them around the round table and keep them focused on the child. And then 12 months later I take them on an ocean retreat. We go surfing which is pretty cool. It's not bad. But the importance is the time, the longevity of the program. And in the meantime, I use their technology to keep communication, because kids want instant communication. So I find myself now doing a lot of texting with kids between the two wilderness retreats, lots of emailing, but mostly texting. Sometimes they text me all times of night, which sometimes isn't real flash. But, I mean, kids need to be connected over a period of time. So the relapse question, I believe that if you can extend the connectedness with the child over time and within the child's life world, that's the answer to falling back, if you like. At this point, my program, after the first 2 years, I've got an 80% retention rate in schools. Now,
that's great.
Looking at
that's
the literature, excellent. It's about a third. It's not too bad. And I think the reason is that it's because we do stick with them over a long period. And also, I mentioned at the outset that I'm heavily involved in sport on the Gold Coast, and I link young guys into sporting associations and into surf lifesaving. And the reason for that is these kids can grow, have freedom to grow as youth, but have still got a form of control or governance around them. And that's really useful. So you're weaning them on to becoming men.
Excellent. Got one more question. It says, I'm a single mom with a teenage son that is out of control. We don't speak all that much, but I know he is getting into drugs. Do you think the best way of confronting the situation would be to call the police and maybe he'll get rehab from the courts for possession? Or is there another way? I just think there should be some consequences.
Well, there should be some consequences, but it's not the police's problem. You gave birth to that child. You need to take responsibility.
Thank you.
And as far as court-ordered programs, that's not going to happen. This kid would have to really have been in a lot of trouble, and you don't want it to get to that point to where he becomes part of, quote, the system.
The system.
And so the parent needs to step up to the plate and take responsibility for her child. Do a random drug test, and then get in touch with a professional. As she's that confused about how to go about this, she can certainly email me or give me a call. I'll talk to her. I have no problem guiding parents, but she does need to step up to the plate. It is her responsibility.
I agree. Let me throw something in. We're just about out of time. Next week, our special guest for October 27th is going to be Dottie Laster. She is a leader in the fight against human trafficking, and she's the winner of the Heritage Humanitarian Award. We will also have Pastor Kerry Decker, who's president and founder of themillionkids.org. I want to thank you guys. For those of you out there, if you have additional questions, you've gotten their email addresses. You can also go to the website. It's answersforthefamily.com. That's answers, the numeral four, thefamily.com. You can email me at westshield@att.net. And as I look, I'm told that we have about 1 minute. Is there anything you want to add before we go?
I just want to thank Linda and yourself for the opportunity to come and speak this morning. It's
You're
been
very
terrific.
Welcome.
And There's much to learn for me here in the US, and our cultures are very similar. And I'm sure that in the next 5 years that the sort of programs that we run in Australia will certainly change and provide this option of therapy for kids, which I think is very useful.
Wow. I just want to remind people that I truly feel there are no bad kids, just good kids making bad choices.
Absolutely. And with that, I thank all of you for listening. Be
thank
with
you,
us
Alan.
Next week with our guest at that time on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.